Scatman's Avenue.
Hey.
Hey.
What'd you think?
About what?
Did you get my text?
Oh.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Did You Get My Text? I'm your co-host, Patton Oswalt. What?
I'm Meredith Salinger.
You are laughing at oxygen. Okay.
I don't know. I'm not. I hate that starting. I'm your co-host. I just hate that. Just say, I'm Patton Oswalt.
Okay. I'm Patton Oswalt.
Good.
And who are you again?
You know.
Co-host Meredith Salinger.
Don't, okay. That's the part I don't like. I don't like that word. I don't know why.
So much stuff is happening. So many things. I am, of course, back out on the road.
Oh yeah, baby.
Doing shows. It's actually kind of, you know, what was nice about I've been on the road now for 3 weeks, back and forth.
This is the very beginnings of for months now. So
exactly.
This is the very beginnings.
Yeah, and we're gonna get better at dropping these episodes closer to when we record them. We're learning.
We are literally learning. We have nothing.
Well, yeah, this one will go up very quickly. So upcoming, maybe if this goes well, no, it'll already be done. But by the time you've heard this, I've already done Medford, Massachusetts, New Haven, Washington, D.C., two shows at the Kennedy Center. I was in Virginia Beach. I was just in
North Carolina. And Atlanta.
Wait.
Orlando Leyba, who's the funniest comedian who opens for you,
yes,
took a video of you going out in Atlanta, and you came out to the Beastie Boys, the song Sabotage, which, yeah, by the way, is the greatest song ever and such a pumper upper of a song.
Yep.
And you got a standing ovation before you even started, and it was very exciting.
Which is very intimidating for a comedian, because what he cuts off, what I say is, there is no way I can follow this. Like, you're get ready to have your expectations blown. You probably should have waited till the end. But it did feel really gratifying. And what it really felt gratifying, and I've talked to other comedians about this, I'm paraphrasing Bobcat Goldthwait, who said, you go back out on the road after the pandemic, and I just got off the phone with my shrink about this as well. We've spent a year and a half only interacting with the world through comment sections and Twitter and Instagram and texting, and you get a very warped sense of what the world is. It comes off very negative and very dire. And then you get back out there and you realize, oh, Twitter and the internet are not the world. Yes, the internet will bring you all the craziness that's going on, but these are little captured moments in time where the general stuff out there, people are just trying to live their lives and be more or less decent. And because you remember when I first was going out on the road again, I would talk to you about how I'm afraid there's going to be some incident on a plane. Someone's going to start screaming and about masks and stuff. And then you get out there and yes, clearly there are lunatics out there because they're being filmed, but there's not that many. Mm-hmm. For the most part, people are pretty cool out there. They're pretty chill.
Well, for me, seeing that video, that little 40-second video of you entering, well, you know when you know someone really, really well and you see them in their element doing their thing?
Yep.
It just reminds you that your person is not just the person that you see at home, but like it made me feel so proud of you and it made me like look at you as the world looks at you like, oh, he's great, as opposed to, ugh.
Oh, here he comes. Yeah, he's coughing.
Oh, God.
He left the sponge in the sink again.
Yeah. Like, when you see someone in their element, like when you see a friend give a speech, like if, even if it's in school and your friend gets up and has to give their oral report or whatever it is, and you're like, damn, I have a smart friend. But when you're like just stupid together, it's, you know, it's nice to see your person in their element.
Well, because my audiences only see me for an hour out of my day. You see me all day, which is, so you see the stupidity and the,
So everyone's
and the temper
like,
tantrum. So like, he is such an elevated, wise being. And you're like, try spending 24 hours with him.
Yeah. It's like your friends are like, oh my God, you're married to Patton Oswalt. Isn't he so funny all day long? I'm like, I want to murder him.
Right. And by the way, that goes the other way too, that, you know, the, you hear these people that were friends with people who end up being serial killers or mass murderers. And they
and go, like, the nicest
but that, that one time he came over and my dishwasher was broken and he hand washed all my dishes. If you hang out with someone all day,
you see a different side of them.
Will see them do something good and something horrible. But that's not who, you know what I mean? That's not the, you hang out with anyone long enough, you'll see them do something amazing and then they'll do something
I guess what I'm trying to say to our audience is you might think you're madly in love with some celebrity, but if you actually ever married them, you'd be like, oh my God, what have I done?
What the hell happened? Why is this going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that, and also that's something that I always tell people, and I didn't realize this till I was older. If you, people that are worried about, I want to be attractive to other people, I want to be beautiful, I want to be handsome forever. The way to be beautiful and handsome forever
is on the inside.
Is to, not just on the inside, get really good at doing something and it, and have it be something you truly love. And then when you're doing that thing, you are suddenly the hottest person on the planet.
This is the thing. It's when you are in your joy, when you are doing the thing you love the most, whether it's, listen, for me, I mean, I could go to the park with my friends' kids and play all day long. Like, that's my element. I love being Mary Poppins. I love being Auntie Mary. I love being mom to Alice. Like, that's, I mean, I love a million things. I also love acting and everything. But like, when you're in your joy and you watch someone in their joy, I think that's when you are the most attracted to them, because they're like really doing what they truly love. And that's why nerds are so awesome, because nerds are basically just passionate about what they're passionate about.
Exactly. I remember watching a documentary called Comic Book Confidential about the history of comics. And they were showing the underground comic book writers and artists of the late 60s in San Francisco, Robert Crumb and Gilbert Sheldon, people like that, doing their little hand-drawn underground comics. But there's footage of Robert Crumb just sitting and really drawing and really into what he's doing. And I was watching it with a friend of mine and who wanted to be an artist. And he was like, look how peaceful and happy he was. Like, yes, he's doing, he is a nerdy, weird-looking dude, got beat up all through high school, never belonged, and then he found his place. And he is so, this is all I need. I'm completely happy. I don't need to search for anything. It's when you're not being needy is when you're the most attractive to people.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's not trying to, oh, what is he doing? Why is he, you know, that's what makes you the most attractive.
Yeah. I remember I went to an all-girls high school from 7th through 12th grade. And so you're with girls in class and you take notes and blah, 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 blah. When I went off to college and I was in my first class with boys and I just watched, I didn't even know boys took notes. Like when I watched a boy like open his notebook and like took notes, I was like, oh my God, wow, boys can be normal and pay attention. And I just never saw them in the element of being smart. I always just saw them out.
Yeah.
I never got to see them in school. So it was very hard to know that, you know, I just thought it was really weird that boys also listen. Take notes.
Yeah, it was, I mean, that's one thing.
And I loved it.
Yeah, I don't want to be like one of these, oh, this new generation coming up. But I do feel bad for all the advantages that Gen Z has in terms of, okay, I'm going to make this a slightly longer story, but this will all tie into what we've been talking about. Orlando Labo opens for me, but usually when I go to cities, I try to bring some younger comedian in to do a guest set to have
from that city,
from that city, or just from that area that, you know, or someone that knows him says, oh, give this person a chance. So like when I was in at the Kennedy Center, I had a woman named Paris Sachet go out and do a guest set. And she was amazing. And then these last gigs in North Carolina, Atlanta, this woman named Denise Taylor, who's very, very young, has been doing it for 5 years and is...
What does young mean?
I think she's in her late 20s.
Oh.
But
didn't like Dave Chappelle start at 14?
He was 14. When I say very, very young, what I mean is she's only been at this for 5 years.
Right.
And she's already brilliant. And I was like, what in the... And I've noticed this with a lot of the
Didn't
younger...
Dave Chappelle his first gig was with you when he was 14 and he killed it, and you were like, holy shit.
Although he told me later, he goes, yes, I destroyed, but I was one of those comedians that destroyed their first time up and then could not get a laugh for like a year, which is actually a worse, like, you went up and ate it. You had nowhere to go but up. I went up and destroyed, and then I couldn't recapture that.
Yeah, that's the thing with child actors, too.
Yeah, that same thing happened with David Cross and Brian Regan. Their first sets annihilated and then could not find it for another year, and it really messed with your head.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this woman, Denise Taylor, is so friggin' brilliant, and I was talking to Lindo, like, how has she been doing this for 5 years, and she just has this, already has this poise, already has this calmness and confidence, and he said, and I never thought of it this way, the younger comics coming up, the Gen Z comics, have access to so much more
content,
where when we were growing up, we would watch Evening at the Improv, but you had to wait for it to be on or maybe be videotaped or have it, but you couldn't just go on YouTube and watch 1,000 different comedians from every generation at your fingertips and then go down rabbit holes and then figure out what you are way quicker. So that's a huge advantage, I think, to Gen Z. A big disadvantage, unfortunately, is a lot of them are online young, and there are a lot of these influencers that are young and very good looking and are rich and famous for kind of doing nothing. They don't have to do anything because they're just good looking. And so I think that's where a lot of incel rage comes from, where people that maybe aren't initially good looking because no one has any time in the wilderness anymore.
Don't say they're not doing anything. Some of these comedians are opening boxes and they take out the stuff and they show it to the camera.
You're right. That, oh my God.
So don't say they're not doing something.
They are, you know what? You're right. They're opening a box.
Yeah.
And they're taking the object that's in the box out.
And then they're saying,
whoa.
Right.
Yeah. Never. Okay. I'm sorry.
That's rude.
That was really rude. They're doing a lot of amazing things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't diss.
But I think that leads to a lot of, but it's like, no, go and woodshed and actually learn a talent. Down the road, it will pay off in such massive dividends. You will not believe the doors it will open for you. Just don't worry about people that are online now opening boxes and getting prizes. You go be the thing, go become the prize that other people open up and marvel at. Go be that prize rather than the person opening the prize and getting free
stuff.
Be the prize.
It's like, be the ball, Danny.
Yeah, go make yourself the prize. So go, and when I say woodshed, I mean, spend some time.
In a woodshed.
Yeah, I remember
is that what you mean?
Yeah.
No, you don't mean spend some time in a woodshed.
Well, no, I mean, that's where that term comes from is I got to go out to the woodshed and practice.
What, cutting wood?
No, I think it's a guitarist musician thing. And
what if there's an actual woodshed?
Well, because a lot of these guys, especially in London, that you're recording your practice space was out in the back because you couldn't be in the house bothering everyone. They're like, go out in the back of the woodshed. Like, just go out there. Just stop bothering me.
Right.
There was a great story that Pete Townsend told about in Britain. Up until a certain point, there was all these arguments. Who's the best guitarist in Britain? Well, it's Richard. No, it's Clapton. No, it's you know. And then then Jimi Hendrix came through town, and suddenly all the pubs were empty. None of the guitarists were out there arguing. They were all back home. Oh dear God, I got to go practice. Oh my God, this guy just saw, you know. So that, like, when you see the real thing, it's like, oh, it doesn't matter how braggy and cool I am at the bar. It's time for me to
go to the woodshed.
Go to the woodshed and just get better.
Yeah.
Chris Rock told me, don't get angry at other comedians being more successful than you. Get funnier than them.
Yeah. Don't complain. Vote. That's what Obama said.
Yeah.
Don't complain. Go and vote.
But instead of like sitting there and ragging on other, there are always going to be people that are famous for no reason. They never last. You just go get funnier or go become a better player or be a better writer. Just go write.
Or
get better.
Be nicer.
Well, always be nicer.
Yeah, I know.
But also to be better at what you do.
Be better and nicer.
By the way, if you get better at
what...
If you get better.
See, that's some good exclamation points.
If you get better.
Not if... Okay, anyway, sorry.
That'd be a good t-shirt.
F you, get better.
Are we moving into our merch phase?
Did we just merch it up right now?
Oh my God, we just did some merch.
What do you call it? Trademark.
Well, T-Republic, call us.
wait a minute.
What?
We're gonna sell that. F you, get better. Hey, did you get my text? F you.
When you get better at what you do, you will actually be happier. It will make you a nicer person because you won't be as... wound up about everything. Because you're like, oh, but I'm so much better. This will happen.
You know how people doodle when other people are talking sometimes? Like if you're at home on the phone and mm-hmm. people doodle while they're on the phone. When I doodle, because mm-hmm. you're talking right now and I'm listening, but I'm also doodling a little bit.
Well, that feels good.
No, I'm listening. Uh-huh. People who doodle listen. Uh-huh. That's not a thing that means you're not paying attention.
Okay.
By the way. In fact, I think there have been studies that say if you doodle while you listen, it might actually, you might be absorbing. I don't know. There's a study.
If you doodle while you listen, you will learn so much more. So get a pen and pad and draw more and more. If you doodle while you listen,
Okay. But what I was going to say is when I doodle, mm-hmm. I usually doodle the same stuff, like a happy face or hearts or mm-hmm. I make like a little house with a little chimney with a little heart.
Sure.
And I also doodle my signature. And when I doodle, when I doodle my signature, it's so good. But if anyone ever asks me to sign a document or mm-hmm. give an autograph or whatever, my signature is atrocious and it's never the same.
Is it because you're being observed?
No, no one's observing me while I'm doing it. It's just if I
but you know someone's going to see it. If you're signing a document,
whatever
it will show
happens,
up somewhere.
Suddenly, it's not a good signature.
Oh, my God,
you're
Ty Webb in Caddyshack. He's the most amazing golfer when he doesn't keep score. He does this Jedi stuff out on the course. Then when he's in the tournament and they're keeping his score, he's just terrible. He
I feel
can't
like
be
I should,
observed.
If anyone wanted my autograph, not that, I mean, people don't do that anymore. You just want a selfie or something like that. But if they did, my doodle should be better.
You should make an ink stamp of one of your doodles. And then just ping.
Because I actually can't. I can't even sign a check. Anyway, who writes checks? It's all Venmo these days. So I'm happy.
We will be right back.
Hey, guys. We're back.
Yes, we are.
Hey, Patton. Mm? You know how our show is called Did You Get My Text?
Yeah. Oh, hang on. Wait a minute.
Yes.
Yep, that checks out. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Well, I got a text from an Oswald, not you.
What?
So.
Okay.
The text said, and it was from a man named Matt Oswald.
Okay.
I think he happens to be your younger brother.
I have heard of a Matt. There is a Matt that I know somewhere.
Very tall, handsome, blue-eyed guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's a
writer.
Or a professional cyclist or something. I don't know what
anyway,
he does.
Anyway, he's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, get a text from him, and it says, are you coming tonight? With a question mark.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what is he talking about? Oh, yeah, his birthday dinner. Okay. I got a text from Matt saying, I need to know how many people are you coming? And I wrote back, no, because you know what? I wasn't fucking invited. And you know why I was? Not by him, by you. You were like, oh, it's my brother's birthday. I'm going out for dinner with my brother for his birthday. Meanwhile, it was this amazing dinner at this incredible Italian restaurant. And there were boys and girls. It wasn't just like boys' night out.
Right.
And you didn't invite me on purpose.
Well, I didn't not invite you on purpose. It was a Friday night. I thought that you had to go do
tennis
stuff.
No,
and
no,
also,
stop. None of this I thought you had to do. Don't do that. If you want to invite someone, mm-hmm. if there's a huge party and everyone's invited and then your like friend is like, hey, I wasn't invited. You're like, oh, I thought you had to. That's not how it works. You invite people and then let them say.
Oh, they get to decide whether they refuse
Listen,
or not.
The bottom line is this.
What?
You didn't want me to come and that's fine.
That's not true.
Listen, I don't.
Absolutely would have wanted you to come
to
that.
No, you did not.
Danny Zucker was there, Michael McKeon.
Yeah, and you didn't want me to come and be annoying.
How would you have been annoying?
I wouldn't have been. I would have been the most charming because you're the annoying one.
In heaven.
Just kidding.
Okay. Well, anyway.
No, my point is, I know you, just be honest. Listen, this is an open forum where we can just be honest with each other.
Open forum?
It is. I think you need to like dig deep down in your soul and mm-hmm. just be like, you know what? I would have preferred
maybe
to just
I
be.
Maybe I didn't want you there.
See? You didn't.
Well, you should thank me, though, because it was me at the end of the table. It was me, Danny Zucker, Ben Mankiewicz, and Michael McKeon talking about old British comedians for like an hour, and you would have killed yourself.
Listen, let me tell you something. I didn't want to be there with you. Okay?
Who tweeted this? I want to be invited to everything and go to nothing.
No, I want to go to things that are fun. Uh-huh. And Matt's birthday would have been fun.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have wanted to sit at that end of the table chatting with you.
You would have been down at the other
I
end.
I would have been at the other
talking
end.
Talking to Barbara Crampton or
talking to whoever else was there. Right. I don't need to talk to you, but you didn't want me to come. you didn't invite me. And then I was like, I didn't know what to say to him. Like, oh, your evil brother didn't invite me. So I was just like, oh, yeah, no, I'm home. And the truth was I was home with Alice, which, of course, you know, someone's got to stay home.
Yeah.
But you didn't invite me.
I guess I didn't.
But guess what?
Sorry.
That's okay. I don't really care. There's a million things I don't invite you to. And I actually prefer for you not to be there. In fact, we discussed this, I think, last week, that I'm going to my big chill college reunion weekend this weekend with all my college friends. And some are bringing their spouses and some...
Really?
Only like three of them are bringing their... But those spouses have known all of us since like graduation, basically.
Oh, so this isn't... And there's no weird catch-up having to go on.
Yeah, and then I was so proud of you, and I sent that little video of you getting that little standing ovation thing to all my girlfriends that are going to be there. And they're like, oh, is he coming? And I was like, no. No, he's not coming. And also, A, he wasn't invited. B, he wouldn't... enjoy having that catch up of all the inside jokes.
No,
he'd hate it. And also he's not a social human.
No,
you can only handle what you can handle.
And also I'm going to be out. I'm out working.
Yes, I know you're on tour. You're going to be in Brooklyn, but besides you being busy, I wouldn't, even if you weren't on tour, I wouldn't have invited you.
Oh, okay. Thank you, baby. Thanks for knowing me. That means she loves me and she knows me.
I do love you and know you. And I think also you didn't invite me because you know me and love me and knew that I probably wouldn't want it to be.
Yeah. You sure you don't want to sit with me and Danny Zucker and Michael McKean?
I worked with Danny Zucker.
On what?
He directed, oh gosh.
What did he direct?
Did he direct HUD? The show I did with Steve Carell? Yeah, he did. I think he directed.
Danny Zucker?
Wait, is he one of the airplane guys?
No. That's David Zucker. Danny Zucker, wrote on Modern Family and had a very, very famous pre-presidential Twitter battle with Donald Trump that was published as a book, collected tweets.
David Zucker and Danny Zucker are two different things.
Yes, people. two different things and two different people.
Right. I worked with the airplane one.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, Danny Zucker had there's a book called He Started It.
Oh, anyway, Matt.
That you should get because it just really, Matt, shows you, oh God.
Had you invited both of us, I would have been there, but you invited your brother.
Unbelievable.
And to like pass on the invitation to me, and he didn't. So happy birthday. I would have gotten you a present.
I have texted Meredith some pictures of young musician and new mother Grimes walking around L.A. the other day.
Tell them who Grimes is, because I didn't know who you were.
Grimes is the now separated, I don't know if they were married. She was with Elon Musk.
Like a girlfriend,
but they had a baby together. Oh. And they gave the baby this weird name. It was like an equation or something, and they fought on Twitter about the name. And then they've broken up, and now she was candidly photographed. They are so posed. This was so clearly, like, show up, take a picture of me. She's reading Karl Marx. Communist Manifesto and walking around in this weird supervillain moth outfit.
I have to say, I just looked at the picture and it was kind of small. I don't have my glasses on.
Uh-huh.
And I just looked at the picture and it looked like a centaur. It looked like a woman riding a horse. Like it looked like the bottom were the horse feet and that the little cape thing was the horse body.
Well,
and I was like, oh my God, why is she? You're like, you've got to see what she looks like. She looks like a centaur.
Well, she's dressed in this, again, it's one of those, and I've encountered this. I remember talking to the maitre d' at Osteria Mozza and he said that sometimes celebrities, when they show up there, their publicists call the paparazzi and it's the celebrity gets dressed and gets a makeup.
Yeah, it's like everyone who walks out of Starbucks looks so good with holding their little Starbucks mug, but they're like so well dressed.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was clearly staged. This is so clearly staged where she's in this crazy
Karl
outfit.
Marx.
She's reading Karl Marx.
But that's like the total opposite of what Elon Musk is all about.
Yes, exactly. I think that's what that was. It's her version of I'm throwing shade. Can you believe how naughty I am? And everyone's like, just stop it. You're not naughty.
You're a centaur.
Not only that, you're wearing a one-off designed outfit that probably cost $20,000.
Listen, I don't know this girl. She might be super nice, so I don't want to be like But just from the picture, it looked from far away with no glasses. She looked like a centaur. Sorry. I'm sure she's lovely. But I looked closer and she's a pretty girl.
Yeah, but she looks like she's dressed like a supervillain. She looks like, as my friend Ben Schwartz said, I can't believe she wasn't killed in the first 10 minutes of Suicide Squad.
Did Ben Schwartz say that at Matt's birthday party?
He was not at Matt's birthday party. Ben Schwartz said that on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
But he, the reason I'm putting this picture up is because this shows you how old I'm getting, where there are certain outfits that I look at now. And the first thing that I think of is I look at an outfit and I think of how difficult would it be to use the restroom in that outfit? If you had to pee or do anything else, how hard would it be to get that outfit off? And this is it's like leggings, but then there's another, like a unitard over it. It looks like it's a lot of work if you had to use the restroom in this. And that's all I can think about.
Yeah. It's like, I had this one wardrobe. Oh, it was during the Mormon times, mm-hmm. like 1835,
right.
I think. But anyway, I was in this one corset type thing, mm-hmm. but they made the corset before. This was filmed in Oklahoma and I live in Los Angeles and right. I traveled there and the wardrobe had already started, you know, because they designed them all from scratch.
Oh,
they
were beautifully
made. And this incredible corset was made out of these steel, it's like these steel rods, but they're like flat steel. They look like rulers, but they're steel. And they put them and they sew them into a corset, but they made the steel rods too long. Like my body's a little bit shorter. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of like went past my hips a little. So I couldn't sit down because I couldn't bend.
Oh no.
And I remember we had to film that day. Like they couldn't fix the costume.
Right.
And I was standing up in the scene, which is great. Mm-hmm. But the trailers and everything, you had to take a car to the set.
Oh,
but
yikes.
I couldn't sit down. So I was like a ruler, like straight, stiff, leaning back. I had to put the car seat back as far as I could to just get in the car. I couldn't sit. And I couldn't sit all day long because I was in this thing.
Yeah.
And they had to like saw off the half of the corset thing. But boy, it's hard to dress and wear things and go to the bathroom.
Yes. But I think that is another sign of age, where I think when you're in your late teens and 20s and you look at some crazy outfit like that, you're like, get that on me because I look amazing and my back doesn't hurt. And I don't. But then you get past a certain
you're
age.
Like, how am I going to go to the bathroom?
And you're
in
like,
this?
How am I going to go to the bathroom? Is that going to hurt when I sit? Like when you're young, I think people are like, I'm okay hurting while I'm sitting as long as I look that good. I don't care.
Yeah.
And then you get to a certain, it's like you, when you go to events, once I get these heels off, I can stay all night. If I can't get these heels off, I'm going home.
Exactly.
I'm not going to the after party. So that whole idea of, you know, you look at those, especially old timey films that are period. And even now, a lot of superhero movies, they would take actresses and in between shots, they would just kind of lean against this board because they can't sit down and all that. They don't want to mess the dress up. So they have to lean against this kind of board. And apparently in some of the, I think Christian Bale's Batman had to do that too, because the costume is so intricate. He just had to lean against this thing. So that's a huge sign of aging is what is your first thought when you look at a really cool outfit? If your first thought is, wow, I'd look awesome in that, then you're young and still vibrant. But if your thought is, how would I use the restroom in that? Then you're past the young, vibrant youth phase.
I don't know. There's those desperate housewives that are always so smoking hotly dressed. And I'm just like, I could never wear those clothes on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm a creature of comfort.
Me too. Yeah, that's why when the skinny jeans look started to make its way into suits, I was very worried because I'm like, that is not me.
No, you're not a skinny jeans guy.
No, and I'm not one of those crazy, like the suits that Mahershala Ali wore.
Oh, he's so handsome.
In the first season of Luke Cage were so amazing.
But he has a beautiful body.
Well, he has a beautiful body and a sculpted face. And all I could think of was there are guys watching the show right now that are like, taking snapshots, going, that suit, and you're like, no, it only looks good on him because he looks the way he does.
Yeah, but
it's going
guys,
to look terrible on you. Don't get this suit.
Yeah, though. But if you have a beautiful body and you are tall and thin and, you know, you look good in everything.
But he's sculpted a certain way that most humans aren't. Like, he just is on this other level. If you look at the suits he wore in that show, you're going, oh no, so many people got a suit like this and it did not work on them.
He is a specimen of handsomeness, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
But you still look good. That you had a suit that you wore to the Star Wars premiere that was kind of like tighter legs.
A little tighter, yeah.
And
I wasn't comfortable.
But you looked good, baby. You looked so good.
I don't care about, I want to feel good. I don't want to look good. That's my thing. I hosted a video game award show at the House of Blues or the Hard Rock Cafe in Vegas. And it was the first year that video games had really blown up and become a billion-dollar industry. And suddenly, these game designers were, in their world, the equivalent of rock stars. So they had all gotten their first, like, fitted suit, you know, bespoke suit for this, because they were all suddenly rich. Mm-hmm. But what was so charming is...
the fabrics were made look like Atari or something.
No. None of these guys realize a suit is not a computer program. You do not put it on and hit run and it just works. A suit you constantly adjust during the night. You shoot your cuffs. You know, you lean forward. You get the shoulder down. They had clearly put the suit on at the beginning of the night and then just didn't think about it anymore. So by the time it was time for them to go up and get their award,
they're all crumpled.
It's all askewed and like one sleeve was longer because they didn't understand. Like no one had, there needs to be a newly rich tech geek how to wear a suit class of just like during the evening, you need to stand up, shake the legs out, make, you know.
Did anyone have a power glove? That would have been cool.
From the, what's that movie, The Wizard? The Fred Savage movie with the, when he has the power? That's where they introduced the power glove.
No, the real power glove. The power glove.
What?
There's a company that made like a glove thing that you could control.
That was the Nintendo thing back in the day. And it was introduced in a movie called The Wizard with Fred Savage.
Well, a friend of mine who happens to be a stop motion animator, mm-hmm. and he worked at Stupid Buddy, Seth Green's company.
Right.
His name is Dylan. Mm-hmm. He is like this magician tech person, mm-hmm. and he rewired his power glove to be able to control the camera. So when he would do the little stop motion things, then he'd like push a thing on his power glove, mm-hmm. and he used it for animating. It's really cool.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow. Way to go, buddy.
But I'm saying that would have been a cool feature to the outfit.
But what would the power glove be controlling?
I don't know.
You would just have it as an accessory?
I guess it's just a really big Apple Watch.
These guys looked in...
Oh, that's my alarm.
Oh, are we done?
Well, I gotta go do something.
Okay, we'll be back.
You know how when you have to go to the dentist, they send you like one of those little reminder cards like, hey, it's been 6 months, you need to come.
Oh, yeah.
Well, doctors do that for everything. And I know this sounds like the beginning of an ad. I said it like, this is not an ad, I'm just saying something. But my baby kitty's vet sent a letter a while ago.
Oh.
Like 4 months ago, like it's time for her checkup.
Uh-oh.
And I'm just stressed to bring her to the vet just because she gets stressed. And I don't want her to get stressed out. I mean, I know she needs a checkup. I mean, I don't know. I mean, everyone needs a checkup. There's nothing wrong with her, which is why I haven't. But you have to keep up on your medicals. They have to check.
Aren't there some kind of like organic treats you can give pets that calm them down and like when you fly with them or something like that?
But just in general, the whole thing sucks.
Well, I know.
And I don't mind.
I'd be happy to take her if it'll take that off your plate.
But she would be happier with me.
I know, but maybe she needs to get used to being with other people.
No, I want her to feel her happiest and most calm and comfortable, mm-hmm. and it's only me that can do it. That being said, they do have that CBD stuff that you can give them, a little bit of like pet CBD to like, but I don't know if that even calms. I don't know. I just don't want her to be stressed.
Give her a little bit of CBD or blow some pot smoke in her face.
Would you stop?
And then take her to the vet.
If I don't get a goddamn pot sponsor after all this, Seth Rogen, can we join forces in some way?
So you basically have gotten a notice 4 months ago that you've been, I
didn't just get it 4 months ago. Then I've gotten emails like, come on, lady.
Yeah. Every now and then I will get some, hey, update this thing, or I got a new prescription card and it took me 5 minutes to do it. But just the idea of, I don't want to sit down and download this app.
Oh, wait,
and
yeah, there's a whole new thing. Like with our insurance, there's a whole new thing where you could like sign it. I don't even.
I already did it.
I know, but I haven't.
I'll give you the card. But what I'm saying is, I sat on that for 3 months because I just didn't want to.
No, there's like a thing. If you have a prescription or something, then they have this company. They'll give you like 3 months in advance and they send it to you.
There's an app on my phone now. Yeah.
That's annoying.
I feel like.
But then again, it's convenient.
It's convenient, but also.
It's the signing up part that's annoying.
Half of our lives are spent downloading new apps and signing in and thinking up usernames and passwords for every school function forever. It's just non-stop. And I've downloaded at least 8 new apps on my phone because of COVID, because every place I work uses a different testing company and they go, well, you need to have this app and then we can send it to you. I'm like, oh my God.
Alice is playing tennis in this thing that ranks players. So you know how real tennis players have a specific rank? They do that with this clinic thing and everyone gets ranked. But you needed an app. And she has her very first tournament coming up this Sunday. And you have to find the player. And it's like, are you in the Serena League or the Venus League for the ages 11 through 12? And what level class? And you have to find her. And then it said, we're going to be playing tennis at this school. But it didn't give the address or the time. So then I had to like email the guy and say, this is the first time I've been on this strange app website thingy. He goes, well, you're not in the Serena thing. You're in the Venus thing. And I was like, but I looked, I saw the thing. And it says that the time is 5 a.m. And he's like, it's not 5 a.m., it's 3 p.m. I'm like, how do you navigate the website?
Right, right.
It's annoying.
That's the new version of back in the 90s. I remember being sent to auditions and they would give you the address. And
But
the address, you would go there and it's like, well, there's no entrance here. And then you have to get it to a payphone and call your manager, and the manager have to call the place. And then we go, oh, it's actually around back.
Right.
You have to enter. We gave you the mailing address. Like, don't give me the mailing address. Right. Actually tell me where I'm supposed to go. I'm not a letter.
Yeah.
And then you show up to the audition stressed out and angry, and then you have a terrible audition.
And then your best friend comes out from just being in the room and goes, hey, Patton, and then looks back at the casting director and goes, Bob, that was hilarious. And then Bob goes, oh, my God, I'm so happy to see you, Steve. And you're like, oh, man, they're best friends. And now I got to go in.
Yeah, so that kind of, again, you're flustered and you can't think.
Yeah. Oh,
it's the worst.
You're boiling hot.
Oh, boy.
There's 20 people in the room waiting. You're friends with half of them. One of them's your enemy.
How in the world did we function without cell phones?
How did we function without GPS? I mean, that Thomas guide was very hard to navigate.
Oh, my God.
Especially
when it went off the edge of the page and you go, oh, wait. But it's never not the next page.
No.
It's like 20 pages later.
Yeah.
And you're doing the Da Vinci code in your car pulled over on Wilshire.
Do you think the Thomas guide is still around? Or do you think everyone just uses GPS? Does that still exist?
That's a really good question.
And if it doesn't, they should have had an app that was their own GPS.
They should have jumped on that immediately.
Yeah, maybe they did.
I think it's too late.
Maybe they joined with Google. Who knows?
I want to look up, is there a Thomas Guide app? That would be amazing if they actually made an app. But it's like, but then how does that work if you've got GPS? Why do you need it?
Well, it's just their company is doing it.
There is no Thomas Guide app.
Okay,
they just gave up. They just went, nah, it ain't happening. We're done. I'm not doing this.
Well, maybe they still have the book.
I got to look that up. I'm just trying to imagine there.
I would like I would like videos of people trying to find their location while using the Thomas Guide.
I want to see
that'd be a good episode.
I want to see the internal memos from the year, whatever the year that the smartphones first came out, from the Thomas Guide executives, you know, saying we have got to. We're in trouble, guys. Our whole world's about to. And then there's a couple of holdouts going, this will never. That no one's going to be looking at their phone while they're driving. It's too dangerous. They need a Thomas Guide. Trust me. These phones, they're too slow. It's not going to, like, what was that? That would be an amazing limited series, the rise and fall of Thomas Guide, but make it like a Watergate scandal type thing.
Oh, my God. Please, let's do that documentary.
That'd be hilarious.
Nobody steal that. Copyright.
Rise and fall of the Thomas Guide.
Trademark. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Call it Doubting Thomas Guide.
That there is a great title. You guys, don't steal that. Don't steal it. So I bid on an auction item for Alice's school. Mm-hmm. It's to help raise money so that they can, you know, give scholarships and all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And I won.
Oh.
And it was something super exciting. Mm-hmm. It was a 4x4 adventure tour through a winery and mountains in the mountains.
Yes.
And I won it and then thought, you know what? What is the best present that you can give your parents these days? They have everything.
Yeah, exactly.
I only want to give my dad adventures.
Right.
Like, I took him to the Rolling Stones for his birthday. Mm-hmm. So I won the auction and I took a little picture of what it was and I told my dad, this is your Father's Day gift. And five people got to go on the thing. So my dad, my stepmom, it was for you also, and Alice.
Aww.
And so the five of us had this amazing adventure.
Yes.
Through this insane winery.
Genuinely insane.
Like the person.
A compound.
Yeah. Can we even? Yeah.
No. Let's just, I mean, it's one of those sprawling properties where.
There are llamas and there are cows and there's zebras and there's organic gardens and there's cave dwellings and there's like a hangar full of cool cars from like, what are those things called, honey, where you attach it to the horse?
Buggies?
Or like a carriage kind of thing.
Well, you know, Surrey's carriage, all the different kinds. Yeah.
Then it had those cool little, what do you call that little red thing? That little, honey, the little thing that had like that cute little house.
There were little RVs and vintage campers almost laid out like a, I don't know if you've ever been, Kate Pearson from the B-52s has a place called Kate's Campers where it's all stainless steel, you know, streamlined, well, airstreamers,
and they have all these. But then they have the other ones that are white, then they're little, and they're like
tiny,
a little.
Tiny, towable
super
ones.
Super tiny and cute, and I want to live in one of those so badly.
Tiny house.
I would love, there's nothing more romantic than a cute little tiny.
It's one of these kind of, it's one of those properties where you realize, oh, there are people that have a level of wealth where they live, where they live is in itself a city, and you have people living on your property that you can't necessarily keep track of. There's that many people working for you, living with you, where you could not know everything that's going on where you live. It's insane.
Well, the nice thing about the tour was that there was obviously someone driving the 4x4 who was a guide who explains everything.
She knew how to drive that thing.
She was so cool.
She was really
cool. And she was so smart and she knew everything. And so, it's like a wine tasting thing. You sit down and you drink wine in between like your little traveling adventure thingies. And she would tell us about the wine and she was super smart about that. But she wanted to be a nurse.
The stuff she was studying, she was doing some kind of double major in nursing and hospital.
But the reason why I bring it up is because I think that a guide is always better than just doing it on your own. And I'll tell you why. On our honeymoon, we went to Paris.
Yeah.
And we were looking at museums and we were looking at things and we ended up getting this guide because we didn't know anything. And listen, I'm a nerd. I like to know the history behind things. I want to know everything. I'm curious about everything. But I want to really know. There's that amazing Irish guy, and he took us through the Napoleon's tomb and
the Musée d'Orsay.
Everywhere. And there were like secrets behind each, like the reasons why the staircase was this big so people could see the other people coming in. You know, there'd be little balconies faced toward the staircase, so you could see the next debutante that walked through the door.
The Paris Opera House was fantastic only because he showed us how the main stairwell was specifically designed so that rich people coming in could be seen by the most amount of people in their new clothing. And I remember he was such an interesting tour guide that we ended up saying, hey, you've taken us to the Musée d'Orsay and the Paris Opera House. Do you have a favorite place that you go to that not a lot of people know to go to? And he said, go to Napoleon's tomb.
But say it in an Irish accent.
Oh, you got to go to Napoleon's tomb, you fucking Nancy boy. And then he broke a bottle over my head. So we went to Napoleon's tomb, it was so fascinating. And God, what a fucked up life for him and his kids. That poor kid, the stories that it was very gossipy tour, which I loved.
Oh yeah, he was a super gossip. He told all the like behind the scenes.
Oh yeah.
It was like Bridgerton. It was like Bridgerton.
Yeah.
But I do love a guide.
Yeah.
My stepmom was a docent at the Getty Museum.
Yeah.
Because she loves art. She loves art history and she loves volunteering and being an amazing person. And so she was. So my favorite thing in the world to do was when my college roommates would come to Los Angeles, or really anyone visiting from the East Coast,
right.
and I would take them to the Getty Villa in Malibu.
Right.
And my stepmom was a docent there, and so she took me through the entire museum, told me like the history behind every painting and the reason why there are these beautiful Louis XIV gold clocks and every detail about, if you look at the painting and it's got a knife on its edge, it's talking about the precariousness of life. And anyway, I knew everything I liked
wow.
because of her. And then when my friends would come, I'm like, let's go to the museum. Well, it's definitely a place you want to take people. Yeah. out of town to show them things.
Right.
And then I'd go through the museum and I'd be like, oh, if you look at, I would so docent it up. I would just be like the
That's
little.
Fantastic.
And my friends are like, you know everything. You're so smart.
Yeah. This tour guide, when he took us through the museum tour, said he knew exactly where to take us. It was almost like he knew what to land on because he showed us where he had us enter. There are these very big monumental paintings that when you look at them, they are very stunning and they are very overwhelming. And he's like, now just remember how stunned and overwhelmed you are by this, these classical paintings. Then he took us up through the history of the paintings, through all the Impressionists and Monets and how painting began to change and become more expressionistic and both abstract and more realistic. And then he ended it right at another one of these monumental classical paintings, which now looked, he goes, do you see how dead this looks now?
Oh my God, the thing, I disagree.
He goes, the thing that blew you away, because everyone is so posed and no one is.
Wait.
Hang on. He goes, no one's being captured in motion.
Right.
And that's the thing that these other painters, the newer painters, brought to it. And it really kind of knocked your head around. It was, oh, that's amazing.
But
I didn't think of it that way.
Even them still, and then like looking to their eyes, what were they thinking? And just the magnificence of the artistry. I mean, I love a classical painting.
But some of them, if you had taken the tour that the way he did it, though, you see that, yes, they are monumental,
it's
but
all
not
monumental.
Alive.
Listen, it's all the, you know, the artist, it's the perception of the person watching, the viewer.
But it was...
I'm glad you got that in your brain. Like, for you,
yeah.
that's an interesting observation
fantastic.
Of art. But
yeah.
again, that's what art is. It's your how you feel about
right.
it. And that's what
but,
you learned while he went through it.
But
in general...
there are things sometimes you'll miss in a painting unless it's being pointed out to you
exactly.
sometimes.
That's why I love a guide.
That's the, yeah.
And if you ever go to a museum and there isn't a guide, get one of those little thingies, those little ear
audio
thingies,
tours.
The little audio tour.
Yeah, my parents went to Rome and to the Vatican. There are art students studying abroad. They make money on the weekends by just walking up going, I'll guide you. I know this, pay me this much money. And they will walk you through and show you all the weird, hidden, secret stuff because they're studying it. And that's how they make money to go to college. And so you get someone who, not only are they guides, they just themselves learned it recently. So they're excited, like, you're not going to believe this.
And also, when you have a guide, mm-hmm. it's nice to have a third person. When you just talk to your own person all the time, mm-hmm. you know, it's nice to have someone else there with you to
a
buffer.
Yeah, one of my favorite documentaries of all time, speaking of guides, is this movie from 1998 called The Cruise, which is about this man named Timothy Speed Levitch. It was directed by Bennett Miller. He was this famed tour guide. He still is in New York on the Grey Line and Big Apple tours, but he would give these, and they show him giving his tours of New York, but they're very, very personal and very more connected with the way he looks at the world and what his philosophy of art and life is. And he became very popular because we're like, you got to take this guy's tour because it was so idiosyncratic. And then he ended up just doing his own tour company where he just got so popular, he got to open his own thing. And he gives these walking tours of New York and they're fascinating.
You know what would be another great documentary?
Mm-hmm.
On tour guides.
Well, that's what The Cruise is. But they
but
just
no,
focus
on many.
One.
No, I'm saying like.
Except that this is, because a lot of tour guides are following a script, this guy started going off the script and made it even more fascinating.
I'm talking about the interesting tour guides, babe. I'm talking about our Irish dude, the little gossipy Irish dude. I'm talking about interesting tour guides who are interested in little, I love a tour guide. I love, and also they have, there's a peculiar kind of person who wants to, they're friendly, they're
yeah.
educated, they are, you know, tour guides are rad. Shout out to tour guides, man.
Yeah, man. If you, there's a guy, I still remember this. I was in middle school. We went to a field trip to Harper's Ferry, West Virginia.
Is that in
Virginia? I can't remember.
West Virginia.
But there was a tour guide that told us about the Battle of Harper's Ferry. And oh my God, it was so compelling and genuinely frightening what was going on in this battle. And he made it so alive, because even though we're a bunch of kids sitting on the lawn, he's like, they're standing 10 feet apart, just opening up with rifles. Imagine being that far from someone. And like, he's so into it.
He made the history alive. So you could understand it better. It's more palatable and you could absorb it and understand it.
And you realize how scary it must have been.
The actual thing.
To be in the middle of this battle was not some great, it was, and he's like, how old are you? And you go, I'm 11. All right, imagine 5 years from now, someone gives you a rifle and says you're in the army. That's how old these kids were that were fighting.
Wow.
It was just like, what the? It was amazing.
That's how, that's why I love watching Rachel Maddow, because she kind of is like, makes history very.
A political tour guide?
Yeah, that's what she is.
Yeah.
So interesting. I wish I was interested in history the way I am now, the way I was when I was studying it. Hey guys, so we're going to do a bunch of speak pipes now and answer your questions and or comments.
Hi, my name is Crystal, and I'm a fan of you both individually and as a family. Get lots of smiles from you all. I have a question about your parenting division of labor. And what I mean is, it seems like in a lot of families that one parent will do more of the psychological, anticipating what the kids need, the planning, the organizing. Another might be more tactical, the day-to-day. I'm just really curious how you all have worked that out, particularly with your schedules and careers, and it would be it's an interesting topic for me and a lot of working parents, so I would love to know. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, I love that question, Crystal.
Wow. Yeah, well, there's quite a
division of labor?
Yes.
Well, first let me
say. A variety of divisions of labor, by the way.
Yeah. You are so incredibly wonderful with. You do breakfast. She really prefers your eggs.
Yeah, I know.
So she prefers you to make breakfast.
Yes.
And you really actually like cleaning up dishes. It's your thing. I think we've talked about
that. We've talked about this.
Yeah. And I'm the one who deals with, there's drama at school. And and how do I I help her navigate a lot of emotional stuff. And I'm also the one who's like, you know, you got to do your homework. These are priorities. These are your chores. You know, I'm the one who's trying to make her the best person in the world. And
there's also a lot of you take on the overall scheduling stuff and the, how do we get the best deal out of this? What's the best use of our time? What do we need to do and not do? So there's
a lot
of that. And
also our schedules switch a lot. So like when you're out of town, I'm on egg duty.
Yeah.
And the other day she said to me, Mom, your eggs were really good. And I said, as good as Daddy's. And she was like, yeah, this time they were.
Whoa.
Yeah, she gave me a huge compliment.
So yeah, what I think basically what division of labor is, this is just my take on it. Be very open about what you guys are good at doing, what you like doing, but then be very open about, there have been days when Meredith is like, you need to handle this email. You need to handle this. I'm done. I've hit a wall. I need like hours to just sit and not. And do that for your partner. Just do that. Because there'll be times when you're like, I have hit a wall. I can't handle this. Please take this off my plate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have to say, looking at a lot of relationships of my friends and people that I know, I've never met a more dedicated dad and or husband than you.
Oh,
really.
Thank
you're
you.
So, he always makes my coffee every morning. We've talked about this.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
Have.
All right. Let's go on to the next.
They know how amazing I am.
I mean, I think they do. But am I amazing? I'm pretty amazing too,
you're
right?
Getting there. Just keep it rolling.
Hello, Meredith. Hello, Patton. How are you guys? Love you guys. My wife and I are huge fans of Patton and his comedy. We even saw you at the small little club down in Culver City that was like a little shared space next to an Italian restaurant. And you did a show there. And I guess I sat in the front and I was a little intimidating looking. And so we had fun there. But my real question is for Meredith. Meredith, I understand you went to Santa Monica High School and were probably there around the same time I was. Did you join the program with Dr. Ford for the theater? I'm curious. Or were you too busy and working and doing all the fun stuff of being a glorious movie star? Anyway, guys, we love you. Take care. Bye-bye.
First of all, everything you said about Patton being great and me being a glorious movie star is totally correct. I did not go to that school. I grew up in Malibu, and I went to an elementary school there called Webster Elementary. And then I went off to 7th through 12th grade at an all-girls school called Westlake School for Girls. And I did do theater, but I really wasn't in school very much starting in 9th grade. I think my senior year, I was only in school for 2 months because of all the stuff. But
because of the siren call of the silver screen.
That's right. But hey, man, Santa Monica is an awesome area. Yeah. I mean, I did grow up there.
Yeah.
These are the places, these are the haunts I visited. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, Pat and Meredith, this is Chris and Dar from St. George, Utah.
Our story is very much like your story. We met online. We texted for months before we met in person. We were 46 when we met. We have our own rabbit holes and our nerddoms in our house. And we just wanted to say how much we love you. We've listened to every minute of every podcast. And we just think that you are amazing. We love you.
So we are getting
married
this Saturday. And
our question for you is, what advice would you give us?
And be gentle.
And be gentle. Oh, Chris and Dar, that's so beautiful.
That's really nice.
That's so cute. First of all, congratulations. You're getting married.
And you met the right way. You met online. You chatted. So you
got to know each other for real.
Exactly. And that way, you know what was also great about that? As nervous as we both were, it makes the first date more exciting than nerve-wracking. Because you've been talking for so long.
Right.
Although I know you were nerve-wracked because you're like, I'm going to meet him and not like him.
Right. I was madly in love with you, but then I thought, oh, God, am I going to like him?
Yeah.
Am I going to be attracted to him? And I instantly was. But talking first and getting to know someone for real, because there is no filter. You are your true self. You don't have to try to impress. Yeah. You don't have to look good. And, just listen. Hey, man and lady.
Let's give them each a piece of marriage advice. Do you want to go first or should I?
I think my piece of marriage advice and really friend advice is just know what you're working with. Know the kind of person that you're married to. I know that Patton has a certain amount of bandwidth for certain things. And when he's over and done, I have to go, oh, that's his bandwidth. And not be like, come on, you need to be better. Just know who you're working with and what they need. And one of my best friends has a husband that she's like, hey, do you want chicken for dinner? And he doesn't answer. And she's like, hey, would you like some chicken for dinner? And he won't answer. And he's like a musician and his head is in the clouds. Mm-hmm. And so she says it because for me, I'd be like, can you fucking answer my question? But for her,
yeah,
she says it nicely every single time till he floats back down to earth and is ready to answer the question. So know the kind of person you've got and let them be that person.
Now, having said that, yes, guard the other person's solitude with the need, especially if they're a creative. You know, she could be interrupting what could be a million-selling song if she doesn't let him float down at his own pace.
Right.
When the other person is very honestly sitting you down and telling you, hey, I am doing my best to give you the wiggle room that you need, but I also have a breaking point and I have a bandwidth in terms of you, in terms of dealing with you. So when I need you to go that extra mile, instead of, and by the way, I'm saying this from me doing this wrong a bunch of times, instead of getting defensive and putting your quills out and covering up, just don't say anything. Just sit and listen and then take a second and really think. There's nothing more gratifying when someone else is telling you something that's bothering them than to watch the other person not immediately respond and actually think about it and roll it over
really
and then go, I am going to try my best to change that. It probably won't be immediate, but I heard exactly what you said. I heard what you need me to do. So I'm going to start the process of trying that and being aware of that. That's all you have to do. So don't get defensive, but also don't get that, oh, I'm so sorry, I fucked up. It will absolutely change from here on out, because that's a lie. You're not going to immediately switch from there on out. You're like, I am going to be conscious of that and keep working on it.
Here's a little insight. Those are what we fight about.
Yeah.
But that's exactly, I'm like,
exactly
I need to chill out and realize his bandwidth. And you're like, and I need to step it up sometimes when we just told people our number one thing.
There you go.
Hey guys, we love sharing things with you.
More SpeakPipe messages, please. More episodes are coming. And next one, I've got a lot of did you get our picks coming up, so just stick around. I'm reloading the barrel, as it were. So.
Have a great day, guys.
Thanks.
This podcast is a production of Meredith Salinger and Patton Oswalt.
In association with Starburns Audio. Executive producers are Cliff Dorfman and Jason Smith. And if you have questions for us, send them to...
Hey, did you get my text? At gmail.com. And don't forget, subscribe to this podcast. It's free, and it helps us get to keep making the show.
Starburns Audio, a podcast network.